Hello, everybody, and I hope you will enjoy the following thoughts and collection of notes I made. The title of my talk is The Doors of Misperception, How We Found the Web Progressive by Using Conservative Terms, a collection of notes. Last year, in preparation for the NECS conference in Lund, Sweden, I've started this collection of notes on the terms active, passive, in connection with performativity, mediality, of self-conceptions of the so-called Web 2.0. The discussions about Web 2.0 have their focus on the activities of its user, as well as on the technical options and or limitations of the various platforms in use. My thoughts and interpretations are influenced by the work of Ramon Reichert and Susanne Lumerding, as we proposed a panel on this subject for the NECS. So let me give you some sort of philosophical twist onto that important discussion by asking about active-passive dualism concerning user-generated content and self-representation. Why, you might ask, is this question of any value to this discussion? Well, when I started to read certain cyberfeminist theory in the late 1990s, I had the feeling that questions of identities and methods to articulate their constitutions were rather sophisticated. In recent discussions about Web 2.0 and even so-called queering of the platforms, the concepts of what is valued a progressive strategy began to be less progressive and more angsty. Where is the cyborg manifesto of the Web 2.0? Where did the discussions of hybrid identities and practices go to? What happened to all those great ideas? Instead, we are looking at profiles on Facebook and MySpace as if they tell us something completely new. But let's take a look further beyond the obvious. The idea of activism as the preferred term in philosophy goes back to at least the ancient Greek. Activism was connected to the concept of male identity. Passivity, of course, was female, ironically connected to the ever-changing modi of matter, whereas activity would lead to a perfect paradise that would contain eternal spring and no death, since nothing ever changes. Therefore, we just have to look at Plato's writing about Socrates. Not only Derrida would call that dualism a perfect example of phallologocentrism that is making any difference between subjects invisible and establishes the white male logic again and again. Thankfully, feminist theory had a look at these axioms and made them an issue up to the 1990s. This dualism has as a consequence that only activism was valued and praised, and that passivity, I think I don't spell it correct, passivity got dismissed as something non-political with almost no agency attached. Contemporary political ideas about self-concepts, like the one Jack Halberstam is sketching in his text on the antisocial turn in queer studies, are connecting the active-passive dualism to the modi of Aristotelian logic, as well as to the dreams of efficiency and sense of the capitalist world. Whereas Halberstam tries to find an expression of radical passivity in performance art, I'd like to connect this term of radical passivity with Rancière's The Emancipated Spectator, a concept from his talk at the 5th International Summer Academy in Frankfurt in 2004. Quote, "Why identify the fact of being seated motionless with inactivity if not by the presumption of radical gap between activity and inactivity? Why identify looking with passivity if not by the presumption that looking means looking at the image or the appearance, that it means being separated from the reality which always is behind the image? Why identify hearing with being passive if not by the presumption that acting is the opposite of speaking, etc., etc.? All those oppositions, looking, knowing, looking, acting, appearance, reality, activity, passivity, are much more than logical oppositions. They are what I can call a partition of the sensible, a distribution of the places and the capacities and the incapacities attached to those places. Put in other terms, there are allegories of inequality. This is why you can change the values given to each position without changing the meaning of the oppositions themselves. End of quote. This problem faces Halberstam's description of radical passivity in its location in performance art, especially two works by Marina Abramović and Yoko Ono. And this is leading to some serious methodological problems. Halberstam locates this passivity within the performances of these two women and points out the active role of the spectators. This is putting the dualism into works again, as their passivity is only to be seen as the reverse activity of the audience. There are various other points I don't share in his text, and the name of the text is The Antisocial Turn in Queer Theory, but it points out that there is relevance to that sort of spin on self-concepts. In the late 1990s, feminists like Trinity Minha pointed out that there are, of course, passive modi of resistance and political agency. With the active-passive dualism, many racist arguments find a common ground. It is like an invisible axiom that doesn't even need a discussion, as activism seems to be the natural preferred modus of action. But is it really that easy? Maybe it is time to put deconstructive strategies on adjectives as well, and not only on subject and objects. Of course, it is not progressive either to stop here pointing at these well-known dualisms. Stating this divide is only a start to go further, to look at the next shift in terminology, the one from performativity to mediality. Throughout the past couple of years, I've come across the term mediality rather often. And every time I did, like when reading Erika Fischer-Lichte's Aesthetics of Performativity or Rainer Matzke's Aesthetics of Mediality, I found myself thinking that performativity is not able to capture what new media content generates as identity strategies. But then I also found myself wondering if this shift is really to follow or should be followed the way those two writers suggested, or if we should instead look at the magic, the overflow of emotions that are bound to these ideas of an ontological rest, something that is connected to Deleuze's idea of the nonsense or the esoterical word. It gets naturalized and reinforced as active mechanism. So I know that the late Deleuze embraced a strange idea of affect, but that is a different talk. The term mediality promised me at first to get into affect where performativity seemed to fail, precisely at the interface of the performer who perceives the own performance and the connection of its very moment with the outside, the spectators. The term performativity, as I know it, relies on the combination of performing and perceiving the performance of self. This was a rather radical break with the conservative identity concepts of the past, where identity would be something buried inside oneself, something true and unchangeable. Performativity also offered us practices that were able to deal with the idea of a nonlinear, incoherent self, the so-called postmodern fractal self. Anti-essentialism should prevent us from being re-established as women and all the seemingly natural things attached. There were new differences, new questions, and more room for strategies on how to sketch out identities. Performativity, though, was bound to the stage, the street, the clubs, the classrooms. It seemed to stop before our screens and not enter the cyberspace. Mediality, on the other hand, or at least the ideas I got from reading Fischer, Lichte, and Matzka, have something magical attached. It seems to be that this mediality is more connected to the idea of contingency and ontological ideas. Is that the backdoor for essentialism to enter the discussion about self-conceptions again? Why is it that this notion is attached? There are a lot more books to be read to find out how and where this term works and leads to what kind of consequences. For me, the borders between performativity and mediality are not clear. In fact, by trying to find out how mediality is used in recent discourse, I was a bit disappointed. Why? When I was rereading the Cyborg Manifesto by Donna Haraway recently, I was really surprised on how contemporary it reads. It doesn't seem to have aged in the 25 years that it has been around. It also points out rather clearly where the informatics of domination would go, and that within this net, terms like activity and passivity would stick to their gendered meanings. Additionally, she offered an alternative when it comes to political strategies for the cyborg self to build alliances against the uber-dominance of web power. What Haraway suggests for these alliances is that affinity is more value for the cyborg than actual family relations. She would also write against any essentialism that is the source for the identity or a paradigm of experience like radical feminists did. As a consequence, technology is not essential, neither is identity. This is the flexible framework that enables political agency to act within the informatics of domination, the 2.0 version of Foucault's net structure of power. Only if all things within the net get hybrid, essentialism can be avoided or at least made visible. With this notion, the division into real and internet friends would reach another level too. This emphasis on cyberfeminist theory by writers like Rosie Braidotti and Sandy Stone on terms like anti-essentialism and non-coherent identity, as well as on narratives and rewriting of narratives, was the source for my idea of mediality that seems to be only loosely connected to what media studies could describe as mediality. As it seems, the ideas are interconnected, though, surprisingly, at the intersection of performativity and mediality. Therefore, I had to revisit a minor text by Foucault about literature that is called Une Fantastique, the Bibliothèque, in which he is not only analyzing a book by Flaubert, but also talks about something that he calls the library effect. This effect describes that the imaginary is not longer fed by the dark, the unknown, but by the known, the citations, and that this new desire is constituted between book pages, comments, rereads, and gaps in texts. For Foucault, this new desire is created by discovering a region of the imaginary that is more powerful than any other before the 19th century, where he locates its formation. This new kind of virtuality knows phantasmagoria that are part of the vigil states of mind, possessing undivided attention, hard studying, and a proper look out of new inspiration. This idea of mediality is not only bound to the paradigm of activity, it is also connected to something passive, the reception of things, reading and perceiving, the world connecting it to something read or heard before. It is very much like Donna Haraway is stating in her work again and again that reading and writing are the most important techniques for the cyborg to compete with the informatics of domination. When we look at the Web 2.0 practices that have a variety like sharing, posting, chatting, self-presentation, then we then indeed we find a similar effect like the one Foucault describes for the 19th century and the explosion of available books, libraries, and archives. Isn't any activity on the net very much interconnected, like citations of other activities on the net? As with citations, I'm not emphasizing on the mere content itself, but on its presentation, the sea of mem. In this citation, rereading of Web 2.0 content, not what feeds the desire to do so or to change or the way it is done. What I want to say is, with this, is that it might not always be the best way to discuss the seemingly active outputs of the Web 2.0 communities by ignoring the fact of the passive practices of the Web 2.0. Again, I'm not talking about dualism. How to describe these two terms in a less dualistic approach? An offer to think about ways to deal with this are offered by Gilles Deleuze in his early work, like Logic of the Sense. Another offer is made by Foucault in the text that I mentioned before, The Fantasia of the Library. Both are working with feedback levels, loops of characters and words that are connecting different times and spaces. The connection is not only done by sharing space. The connection is done either via translation or memory. The meaning or value of a word, picture, character, etc., etc., is not produced via linear logic. It is produced by a sophisticated pattern that is stretching from page to page, sentence to sentence. Within esoterical words and nonsense, meaning is created like chimeras. This paradox logic offers a completely new basis for reasoning. There is no depth, no behind, only surface and tension. It sounds very easy, even trivial, but on a second and a third look, or by trying to apply this system to arguments, it quickly shows how radical this approach is. For Foucault, he uses a similar way to analyze Flaubert's Temptation of Saint Anthony. The temptation gets represented in this very moment of interconnecting different spaces and positions. He comes to the conclusion at various points that there is not one truth attached to the temptation, but that there are various ones and they are in use simultaneously. Where does this all lead in my chain of thoughts? When we agree on the necessity of discussing not only the visible content of the Web 2.0, but also try to find a way to describe the creation of the content in a less dualistic way than it might be possible to get a glimpse out on what is new about the Web 2.0 rather than locating it in the pure technological details or adjectives like activity. This would open up spaces in between the practices that are invisible up to now and allow to theorize identity concepts alongside different terminologies. When performativity got us to see that even the seemingly most natural habits are cultural practices, then mediality has at this point in time not really reached that power, and we should carefully look at the very basics of our methods and systems to make sure that the logical consequences are really the ones we want to reinforce. It will be useful to take a deeper look at the intersection of mediality and performativity when discussing self-concepts of the net. It will take time to find the difference that is in between active and passive, as well as describing hybrid adjectives for their agency. There is something new going on the web, but I'm not sure if we have started to look at it from the angle that will give us the questions that will make it visible. Maybe that is why mediality has still this metaphysical glitter attached. Maybe that is why performativity still works quite good when it comes to describing self-concepts and political agency on the web. Yet I think that the fact that more and more essentialist, metaphysical, or even worse, ontological dreams are connected to what we call the Web 2.0 points to something that is hard to get, even harder to describe. Eventually, the web is more about reading than writing, less about profiles than about instant messengers. Maybe it is about private conversations and passive content creation. Maybe. Let's find out. Thank you.